Now we're joined by the experts at Vettafi, a new data analytics and thought leadership company that is transforming financial services from an industry to a community, one relationship at a time.
The cyclicality is kind of being upended by those nearshoring and rearshoring trends that we're seeing in America. We've got the enabling technologies and the most promising applications of those technologies.
Zeno, welcome back to the podcast. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, I was thinking, when are you going to have artificial intelligence actually do these podcast interviews on your behalf? Are we getting anywhere close to that?
Are you sure it's not me as an AI right now? Yeah, I mean, look, some people are already using tools like that, which can help generate transcripts. And now there's actually open source models that you can use off the shelf that can translate your voice in the different languages. So theoretically, we could use this podcast as is and then convert it into different languages pretty easily today.
It's amazing. So, yeah, one of these times we're going to have to do that. You're going to have to see if you can fool me and if I can discern that it's AI that I'm talking to and not you.
That's a good idea. Maybe we'll sprinkle it throughout.
All right. Okay. So look, we are smack dab in the middle of earnings season. And I'll tell you, I don't like to place too much emphasis on quarterly earnings. I just feel like there can be a lot of noise here. And I think listeners know my preference is to focus on the longer term. However, I think given the current top heaviness of market cap weighted indices, which are obviously loaded up on mega cap tech companies, I do think it's probably prudent to pay at least some attention to how earnings are faring. And last week we had a bunch of big names report: Tesla, Meta, Alphabet, Microsoft, and of course, artificial intelligence, which is one of your areas of expertise, remains a huge topic of discussion, I think, around all of these companies. And so I thought to start, I'd love to hear just your big takeaways from these earnings releases, especially as it pertains to AI. Like, what did you see there?
Yeah, I mean, kind of high-level summary. You know, not every company that we're following that's a big spender and player in this space obviously has reported. We're still early on. But it's kind of the same thing that we called out last year, that we're going to see, and what we're seeing is more layoffs and more investment at the AI and in AI infrastructure and training happening simultaneously. I mean, we're seeing both. You know, Tesla just announced another round of layoffs, and the stock has been ticking upwards after a pretty bad start to the year. I mean, they had been effectively written out of the Mag 7. Same with Apple. And Apple's a different story. But yeah, so basically every single company revised upward their spending into cloud infrastructure, R&D, training, like all the elements of AI. I mean, these companies are going all in. And the reason is this is a gigantic business model shift. You know, their core businesses are at stake. The way people use technology is changing. And they believe that if they are not the ones leading with model or training effectively, like, you know, you can have a model and train the model and own the model. But if you're actually providing the cloud infrastructure behind running those models, and increasingly more real world use cases, that's kind of the future of how compute and business models will look. So the play from these big companies is that they think that we're shifting towards, you know, the cogs of life being and the OpEx of life are going to be more AI compute related. So they're building for that. So we saw some positive and negative reactions. Obviously, we saw Meta, you know, get kind of smacked because they said, hey, we're actually not seeing the benefits of this AI investment in the near term. And in fact, some of our core business markets are facing some risk. You know, for example, in the EU, they're getting a lot of flack for their the Digital Markets Act and the AI Act around being able to opt out of their algorithms, which is a headwind for them. So same story. They're investing heavily in AI. They have in a separate AI group that also produces open source. And in fact, the Facebook AI research group, the FAIR, is one of the top researchers in AI and have produced incredible research, not just for, you know, the social media network as we know it, but also in image recognition and videos and lots of different areas of AI. So it's not just kind of these like language models that we're looking at here. But the way that translates into their business model, and Facebook's growth is actually a separate story. And so that's something to be watching out for here, is that, you know, just because these companies are investing heavily here doesn't mean they're necessarily building a sustainable business model out of it, especially if it's open source, which I'm very pro open source. But if you're a shareholder, you're going to start wanting to see that translate into upside potential. And they're playing a long game, right? There's augmented reality. There's lots of data they already have on us, for better or for worse. And we'll see if they can kind of transition to this more personalized AI era. And if not, you know, how does that impact their core advertising business? And I'm talking about Meta here for now, but that also applies to companies like Alphabet too.
You obviously follow this much more closely than I do, but I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, really, my takeaway from looking at these earnings last week was you could see the clear focus on investing heavily in artificial intelligence and things like new data centers and obviously AI chips, those sorts of things. And I think investors are closely watching that because they want to see what the return is going to look like. Obviously, it takes a lot at these large companies to move the needle. Out of everything that you saw last week out of earnings, or you heard on the earnings calls, what excited you the most around artificial intelligence? So we talked kind of on the spending and investment side. What excited you?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, look, we saw Amazon, you know, seeing a boost to data, you know, they're investing more in data centers. There's also, if we go downstream, the CHIPS Act, this is not really earnings related, this is outside of that, but we're starting to see some of the pull through from the CHIPS Act. So I think just looking downstream and upstream from where AI is, like the applications as well as the components that help enable the scaling of AI beyond just data centers, is really interesting. As I mentioned, like, they're not just building this to have data centers. They're building this for actual use cases that are in the future and may not even be designed yet. You know, we look at the robotic space, obviously, with the RoboGlobal background, and, you know, we're increasingly going to be expecting more physical world automation that's enabled by AI. So what are the companies that are going to start benefiting from that? Well, companies are involved in the design and manufacture of chips themselves, such as Lam Research and Applied Materials, are starting to see, you know, upward trends coming again. You know, the last couple of years, actually, despite NVIDIA taking off so much, was from an overall perspective, we saw some slowdown in other parts of the chips market. So these seem to be rounding out. Kind of looking into the other areas, you know, we had the AI the legislation passed by the U.S. government. And they're looking at increasing regulation and transparency. So they want these government agencies to adopt AI, but they also wanted to do it in a way that you know, protects and showcases how it's being used. So there needs to be, you know, an explainability and transparency element to it. And that's going to require a lot of companies that are in that kind of big data and observability space, like, and also cybersecurity, because the more we automate using AI, the more we're going to have to make sure that there's no weak links in those business processes. Every business process has its own set of kind of, you know, immune systems and muscles, if you had to kind of translate it in that way. But these are companies that are like Datadog. We just saw, we've seen a lot of acquisitions in the observability space with Splunk and Alteryx last year. There hasn't really been any standout, like, new wow moment yet. I would say, you know, the response to Tesla was a little bit, you know, that kind of took me by surprise, that how excited and how much uplift they got from kind of like the recent announcements there, especially considering in the end of the day, they're still a car company. You know, the robotics angle is interesting. You know, their AI training is interesting. They recently just got approval to start collaborating with Baidu in China. So there are things positively, and Tesla is a small weighting in our Think AI index. So I'm not trying to bash it. I just, you know, the way we work at Robo is, you know, the scoring process, we take into account technology leadership, market leadership, as opposed to market cap for weighting. We look at the revenue purity towards the AI theme. And so this is inching that upwards, but, you know, we have a long-term strategy on all these companies, but we're also well aware that there could be significant business model risk to these companies that are, you know, overweight and overheld and clearly, like, market cap leaders.
Zeno, we'll talk here in a minute about the top heaviness of market cap weighted indices, but you mentioned NVIDIA. And obviously, with the increased spending on artificial intelligence by these mega cap companies, that clearly would seem to bode well for a company like NVIDIA. And to be clear, that's no market call on the stock price. I just think that if you have some of the largest companies in the world increasing their CapEx spending around AI, that would seem to benefit someone like NVIDIA. Is it that simple? And we don't have to get into, I mean, you can touch on valuations if you want and the valuation of NVIDIA in particular, but just high level, that seems to be intuitive.
Yeah. So NVIDIA clearly has been the silverback gorilla. Like they're leading the charge. They've had the most adoption and revenue and bottom line growth from AI so far. That's also put a big target on their back, like King Kong, and their biggest customers are looking to build alternatives, both on the application-specific integrated circuits, known as ASICs, so for like custom AI chips, and also their competitors like AMD and even Qualcomm for more of the kind of edge personal device compute, which we may or may not see become the norm. And that's kind of like a tangent that we don't know how it will play out. And kind of diving into that is that, as I mentioned, you know, we're in this kind of AI space race for training. And a lot of the goal here is not to just build these big models that have to run on data centers and require tons of compute and tons of energy, but actually the opposite, where these incredibly sharp models can run on your local device and don't have to send data to the cloud. And that's a very different business model, because at that point, if it's open source, you're not paying as much. There's not as much energy being used, and you could use it in remote areas, even though, you know, on the flip side, we're getting more satellite internet and more bandwidth and latency reduction from companies like Starlink. But that being said, you know, that ability to run locally on device means that if you're building a business model around companies using your data centers and eventually people can run more locally, That'll be a battle that we'll see playing out more in the future, as companies trying to contain in their ecosystem versus just the competitive dynamics of being able to run locally with your own kind of AI platform, a personal AI system that understands you, isn't operating on behalf of another player. So NVIDIA is clearly still going to keep winning for a bit. Like the whole AI and semi-chip market is not anywhere near slowing down. There's no demand decrease in any near-term visibility by anyone's market calculations, but who wins will certainly shift as customers come out with their own systems and competitors play out, and just the market evolves into kind of this next phase of artificial intelligence deployment.
Going back to some of the companies that reported earnings last week, I mentioned Alphabet or Google. And they're interesting to me because in conversations I have with investors just about what's happening in AI, Google always seems to come up. And the reason is there's this thought that AI poses a threat to Google's existing search business. That, like, think about ChatGPT, that's sort of a significantly souped up version of Google search. Is that the correct way to think about it? Is that an issue for Google longer term?
Yeah, certainly business models are going to shift here. I mean, if you're looking at connecting from A to B, which, I mean, search is effectively, a two-way street where you're trying to find something that's most relevant to you. And that's either a one-on-one, like I'm looking for a site or a specific source or some data point. Or increasingly, AI is allowing for kind of, you know, personalized search, which understands context. It's more proactive. For example, it could understand, like, you're going to be in another state in a month. So it could, proactively suggest things. Now, that sounds a little bit like advertising, but, so it's yet to be seen exactly how advertising works in a kind of proactive, personalized AI, generative AI society. Whether it can operate and be viable business model without that, but effectively, yes, Alphabet gets a lot of their money off Google search, for example, advertisements, and they also have YouTube, and they have a lot of data on YouTube, and there's a lot they can do with their different platforms. So it's not necessarily a dead end for them or game over, but certainly they're going to have to figure out how to, A, technically stay on top of things so people don't start to choose other options. And that's kind of, I guess, the key issue here is that the way the internet and tech has played out for the last 20 years is we have these market titans that clearly dominate the game, but now you have newer players that are coming along that can do a lot with a lot less. And so if people are willing to or see value or less value in you know, choosing an Apple ecosystem because, hey, they're using OpenAI anyways, potentially, or I don't care about the blue and green tech, I think we're going to start to see kind of new platforms appear. And AI is an enabling platform for new, it's like a new operating system. You can build an operating system off, on top of it. And eventually, I mean, people are saying, you know, it can increasingly code itself better. We're going to have increasingly more custom user experiences, so dashboards and things that work for you, instead of, you know, for example, sending you advertisements because they know you'll click on it and give them money through the click through. And so I think that's kind of this big shift that we're going to see over the coming years. But it's going to be incredible what we'll be able to do on our local devices in a couple years without the need of big tech. I think that's the big issue for a lot of these players is we're going to be able to do a lot without the need for some of these companies soon. And they're going to have to figure out how to wedge themselves in and maintain that market leadership.
Zeno, if we start moving our conversation towards the ETF space, you mentioned the Think Index earlier. So for listeners, VettaFi does offer the Robo Global suite of indices. And one of those, of course, is the Robo Global Artificial Intelligence Index, which powers the Robo Global Artificial Intelligence ETF, ticker THNQ. And I pulled some performance data. This is through the end of last week, by the way. But if I look at some of the artificial intelligence ETFs out there, and obviously there are some real differences in underlying methodologies, but THNQ is flat on the year, while the S&P 500 is up about 8%. And if I look at some of the other AI ETFs, so let me just go through a handful of these. The Roundhill Generative AI and Technology ETF, ticker CHAT, that's actually up 10%. The Global X Artificial Intelligence and Tech ETF, AIQ, is up 5%. And then the WisdomTree Artificial Intelligence and Innovation ETF, ticker WTAI, is down 5%. And again, those are through the end of last week. But point being, there are some real disparities in performance here. And so just given how closely you track this space and obviously your involvement with the Think Index, I'd love to have you comment on that, maybe what's driven performance overall in an ETF like THNQ, and then what investors should be thinking about if they're looking at this space. This is a space clearly attracting a lot of attention. So what should be some considerations here?
Yeah, so I would definitely say, you know, how they're thinking about looking at where the space is at today and where it's heading. I've mentioned a couple of those themes here, and there's disagreement in the community about how these things will play out. So there's also kind of a philosophical angle here, aspect here, but ideally you're trying to find plays that can win in a number of different scenarios. Another consideration is just the weighting and concentration. You mentioned CHAT, and they've got about a 50% weighting in the top 10 names with, 10% or so, in NVIDIA, 10% in Microsoft, and, you know, heavy in Alphabet and Adobe and Baidu. So you see a bigger weighting in companies like NVIDIA, which have, you know, come out the gates really fast again this year. So that's definitely played out. And, you know, NVIDIA is still the one to beat. But I think, as I've mentioned, you know, it's definitely from our own, like the Think Index, for example, it's the most expensive on a forward EV sales basis. Out of everything, I think it's like around 20, where the rest of the index is trading at around like 6.6 times, more or less. So it's more than three times more expensive than the rest of the index. So I would say the rest is less expensive. So one thing is kind of the weighting, the number of companies, like how many number of effective holdings are in the portfolio. A lot of times you'll get, like, you know, if you look at the Qs and things like that, you've got a lot of companies in there, but a few represent most of the index, and then you've got like 50 companies that are under a 0.2 weighting or something like that. And so you're not really holding these companies that may have a lot of upside and potential gains going forward. And and are, you know, in a niche that is set to see a lot of growth. For example, like a company that's in the $2 billion market cap range is not going to be well represented there, even if they're in a place with strong technical leadership that's in a rising tide scenario. Obviously, I mean, we have to also assume, you know, if you've got an ETF strategy that's heavy in the big tech, like the Mag 7, there's a lot of overlap with, you know, the Qs. And so how differentiated is it from the Qs? Maybe there's a little bit more, even more weighting in some of these big cat names, but we're not as confident that lead and that share outperformance will hold true. We're still, I think, at pretty high spreads of, you know, valuations from, you know, mega cap and the rest of the ecosystem, especially as it relates to some of these names that are really starting to see increased profitability and earnings outlooks from this AI adoption and pull through from the data centers, from training, and increasingly we'll see actual live usage of AI and deployment there. So the weighting, there's also, you know, yeah, so just like top and bottom line growth. And then obviously, you know, that those valuations from a forward-looking basis are set off Wall Street. And so if Wall Street's wrong about the performance of, you know, big tech names or small cap, you know, that effectively changes the valuation. And so you could have companies that have higher outlooks a year out from now that are not actually, you know, that won't hit those targets. And so effectively, you know, so we think that some of these big cat names might miss that. So if you look at what's been performing, it's been semiconductor, it's been network and security, so cybersecurity companies. Big data and analytics players have actually been underperforming this year. And so I would say, you know, if you're looking at this, you want to get diversification from the Qs and S&P, you know, explore some strategies that offer that if you think that, you know, there might be a little bit overweight and overholding in those companies that we've mentioned. Yeah, any thoughts?
Yeah, well, look, in just a few minutes left here, but I think this really is the perfect bookend to where we began the conversation, because I mentioned the top heaviness of market cap weighted indices, and obviously we talked about some of the earnings results there. And you look at SPY, for example, top 10 companies comprise what, you know, well north of 30%. Of that index, where the Qs, the top 10, it's significantly more than that. And I feel like the last several times you've been on the podcast, we've had this running conversation about concerns over the top heaviness of these indices. And, you know, my sense is your takeaway has been, and I think you did a good job of just explaining there, to potentially move down the cap spectrum, look at some of the companies outside of mega cap tech. And I think, you know, clearly you're still very excited about what these mega cap companies can do in the AI space. We'll see, you know, how they execute, but there clearly is some concentration risk here. And I think this is front of mind for investors. So, I mean, is that the takeaway, that you can be invested in, say, SPY or the Qs, but you should be looking down the cap spectrum? You should be looking at alternative holdings. I mean, is it that simple?
Yeah, I think it makes sense to diversify. I mean, if you've been a huge holder in these, you know, Qs, S&P, and are thinking, okay, I feel like these have done, you know, S&P, I think, you know, hit, you know, effectively all-time highs very recently. I'm not sure where we're at today, but you're like, okay, I'm thinking that, you know, maybe things are a little overweight here. You could diversify out and get strategies that have less overlap. Maybe even more, you know, geographical diversity as well. So I think, you know, there's also geographical diversity, which isn't as present in, you know, obviously the Qs or S&P.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it always comes down to risk management, because I think it's important to reiterate that if you're an investor in S&P 500 or the Qs, and you have been over the past decade plus, well, guess what? You have received the benefit as the stocks have run up. And I think, as we all know, in the markets, it's very difficult to call a top and determine exactly when things may turn. But it really gets into risk management. And so I think as concentration increases, there's no question that risk goes up. That doesn't mean that things can't keep running, but it should just be front of mind that if you feel like that risk is becoming a bit too much, then obviously want to do some of the things that we're talking about here. But Zeno, we're going to have to leave it there. As always, great stuff this week. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
That was Zeno Mercer, Senior Research Analyst at Vettafi.